Frank is here.
Thank you. Citino Britton.
Rob Trottier is here.
Is anyone from GHTD on? Jennifer Cassidy? Tona.
Vicky is here.
Oh, Vicky, thanks.
Thank you.
Tona Handover? Tona Avon? Berlin?
Handover's here.
Thank you. Avon?
Larry Barilla's here.
Thank you. Berlin? Bloomfield?
John Coleman is here.
Bolton? Tona Canton? Tona Columbia? Tona Coventry?
Here, Todd Penny here.
East Graham, I'm sorry. Tona East Hartford?
Doug Wilson, here.
Town of East Windsor?
Glenn Norton, here.
Ellington?
M. Webb, here.
Enfield?
Donald Nunes, here.
Farmington?
Here, Russ Arnold.
Town of Glastonbury?
Dan Pennington, here.
Town of Granby? Town of Hebron?
Evan Kelly, here.
Manchester?
Yep, Lamar over here.
Mansfield? Marlborough?
Peter Hughes here.
Thank you. Newington? Plainville? Rocky Hill? Simsbury?
Simsbury's here. Pomeroy. Thank you.
Somers? South Windsor?
Jeff Doolittle here.
Southington?
Annette Turnquist here.
Thank you. Stafford?
Devin Copperweight here.
Suffield?
Bill Hawkins here.
Tona Tolland? West Hartford? Wethersfield?
Derek Greger here.
Willington?
Trace Pizzato here.
Windsor?
Adam Kessler here.
And Windsor Locks?
Jen Rodriguez here.
Thank you. Is there anyone else online from other organizations?
Yes.
I'm sorry. One at a time.
Chuck Harlow with Fussin' O'Neill.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Morning. Grayson Wright with CT Dots.
Thanks.
Morning, Kimona Simpson.
Hi, Snow Peng from Connecticut DOT.
Okay, thank you. And the next person? There was someone else.
Jennifer Cassidy, Greater Hartford Transit District.
Thank you.
Karen Reamer, Connecticut DOT.
I'm sorry, I didn't get your name.
Sorry, Karen Reamer.
I got Karen, the last name.
R-I-E-M-E-R.
Thank you.
Karen, I think Chris Edge and Neil Pade have joined as well.
Thank you.
That's correct, thank you.
Karen, I don't know if you picked up Peter from Marlborough.
Yes, I did.
Okay.
We're all set, John.
Okay, thank you, Karen.
You're welcome.
First, we have two new members. We have Todd Rollin from Somers and Annette Turnquist from Southington. I'm not sure their names, but...
Yes, Annette Turnquist from Southington.
Welcome
to the Transportation Committee, the best committee in the country.
Woo!
Hello, everybody. I hope everyone had a good holiday weekend and is dealing with the events of the of that we have to deal with, and that your work is all going well. I will turn to the public forum. Is there anyone from the public that wishes to address the committee at this time? Hearing none, we'll move on to the adoption of the minutes of our meeting held on August 17th, and I would entertain a motion to so do.
So moved.
Hold on.
Jim Solomon.
Is there a second?
Second, Jeff Doolittle. Second.
Thank you both. Are there any corrections, deletions, additions? Hearing none, all in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Any abstentions?
Chris Edge Berlin.
Glenn Norton, East Windsor.
Did you get those, Karen?
Chris Edge and Glenn Norton.
Chris Edge and then East Windsor.
And Southington.
In Southington.
Thank you.
The motion passes. The minutes are adopted. Staff reports. Carrie, you have the first three. The first is our meeting announcement protocol, which was posted.
Thanks, John. So we want to just take a minute to touch base with everyone about sort of the protocols with setting up these meetings. Given COVID-19, it looks like we were going to be doing these remote committee meetings for the foreseeable future. So I just wanted to bring your attention to a few things that have kind of gone into effect the last few meetings that you might not have noticed. First of all, each of these meetings has a unique Zoom credential and login. So just make sure that you are looking at the most recent email from Karen to make sure that you're logging on to the correct meeting ID. And again, Karen will be sending all those out to committee members, and then members of the public can request them from her directly. We're also including an ICS file for Outlook in each of the mailings now, so you can add the meeting and the credential straight to your Outlook calendar, and a number of you did take advantage of that this past month, and you can feel free to RSVP that way instead of sending a message directly to Karen. Either way works. And then one thing that we're thinking about doing is historically we've been sending out the mailings on Friday afternoons. It seems like sometimes those have been getting lost. And so we're thinking about moving it to a Monday morning distribution. That's still a week out from the meeting and is fully compliant with all of our rules at CROG, but we wanted to just get feedback from the committee if you would prefer a Monday morning. So that would be 7 days out instead of the 10 we've been doing.
Does anyone have an objection to moving the mailing from Friday to Monday? Hearing none, so do.
All right, so starting next month, you'll be getting our email Monday morning the week ahead of the meeting. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Kara. And moving on to the draft 2124, yikes, PIP program.
Yep, and I'm actually going to do this one and the next one jointly since they were on the same memo. I just wanted to let everyone know that our draft transportation improvement program, the TIP for fiscal years 21 to 24, was posted last week for public comment and review. That public comment period is going to run through October 12th, and we are holding virtual public meetings on that on the 30th. All the information on how to make comments and how to attend those meetings are on our website. But Mike Cipriano is going to be kind of our point person for collecting the comments and helping folks get onto the meetings. And that's the TIP as well as the associated air quality conformity analysis. And at the same time, the state's TIP, DOT's Statewide Transportation Improvement Program, is also open for public comment right now. Everything is on their website, and their public comment period is running through October 9th with public meetings on September 23rd. So we'll be looking for Transportation Committee and Policy Board approval and action on that next month. But if anyone does have comments on them, you're welcome to submit them to us in the meantime. And we'll be bringing the updated draft that incorporates any of those comments at next month's meetings.
Thank you, Karen. I'm not sure everyone goes through them in great detail. So are there any significant additions or surprises?
Nothing's terribly surprising. I mean, as all of you know, we amend the TIP nearly monthly. This does incorporate all of the performance targets that we've approved over the past few years have been incorporated this time around. That's a new inclusion, because 4 years ago, the performance-based planning was kind of just getting started. So that piece is more developed this time around. We have gotten a comment from GHTD that there might be a disconnect there. So we're looking into that, and we'll be adjusting it ahead of time before the next meeting. But nothing was too surprising. It's also worth noting that we did an equity assessment, as we do every year, and we'll have more details on that next time around. But the analysis did indicate that there isn't any discrepancy in terms of where we're spending the funding in terms of our Title VI and environmental justice areas.
Any significant state initiatives going out, you know, to 2024?
You know, within our region, it actually looks, we have a somewhat smaller total amount of money this time around, it looks like, but it's because things like Fast Track and the Hartford line have fallen out since they've already been adjusted. I mean, Charter Oak is in there.
How about I-84?
Not anything for construction. And since they adjusted that down to the, they're now doing that PEL process instead of a full NEPA. I think they're predominantly using state funds for that, so it's not in here.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions on the TIP? Tim, you're up on the Community Connectivity Grant Program.
Okay. Thank you. We just wanted to bring your attention to the third round of Community Connectivity Grant Program. These are grants that are intended to improve accommodations for bicyclists and pedestrians in urban, suburban, and rural community centers. For this round, they'll be awarded on a competitive basis between $125,000 and $600,000. All the application materials can be found at their website, which is ctconnectivity.com. And one note here that I did want to point out is that municipalities who were previously awarded a grant under the program must have progressed with their project past the point of submission of final design and issued a notice to proceed or authorization to advertise their project in order to be considered for an award this time. Project applications are due at 4 p.m. on Friday, October 16th, 2020, and each municipality can submit one application. The announcement is in your packet.
Thank you, Tim. Any questions? All right, Tim, the webinar on Complete Streets.
Yes, so together with our consultants, Fitzgerald and Halliday, as well as Mike Leiden from Street Plans, we're putting on a webinar about our Complete Streets plan, policy, and online network tool. And so the webinar is going to go over some of the processes that we went through, including a machine learning assessment of regional land use and a quantitative regional network development process. But it's also going to demonstrate how to use some of the tools that we created, including our online network tool, which has some typical cross sections for links on the adopted online Complete Streets network map. It'll also give an overview of a quick build guide that was put together for the region by Street Plans. This is on how to do quick build demonstration projects, and it includes some information unique to our region. And then it also talk about some of the local projects that have resulted from this effort. The webinar is going to be on September 24th from 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. And you can find a link to the registration on our website at crog.org. It's in the news section as well as the events section. And finally, it's going to be available for 1.5 AICP continuing CM credits. And there's information on how to get that in the registration.
Thank you, Tim. Any questions? All right, moving along. CT Ride's quarterly report. Frank?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Coleman. So these are some highlights from the second quarter CT Ride report, which is between April and June. So on the marketing side of things, CT Ride continued with the development of its website. This has been the case for some time now, and in the second quarter, they focus more on responsiveness testing and content development. Currently on the website, that is on its telework page, they have recently put on the webinars that they have held, as well as the updated guidelines on COVID-19 counter measures there. Talking about telework webness, in the second quarter, CT Rise developed three of them, and the average attendance for these three was around 81 people. Along the lines podcast, as we all remember, the pilot episode was placed on hold, but eventually it got off the ground, and this was hosted by Rich Andresky of the DOT, who is the Bureau Chief of Public Transportation. He had two other guests with him, and the pilot episode posed the question, "Is public transportation dead?" And you know, there are this discussion on the podcast covered issues on public transportation during the COVID era and how this is impacting transit riders and transportation stakeholders. Virtual room, due to the inability of CT Rise team to go out physically to visit work site because of the COVID, CT Rise in the second quarter began the development of a virtual room that will enable them host events remotely. With regards to participating organizations for CT Rise, at the end of the second quarter, CT Rise had 314 participating organizations, three more than what they recorded in the first quarter. And on the outreach side of things, they were able to hold 151 virtual meetings and events. Any additional information on, you know, CT Rise rideshare activities can be found in the packet that was sent out. And if anyone has any question, you know, I can take them. But if not, back to you, Mr. Coleman. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. Any questions? And the name is John, please, Frank.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate it. Terry, the T2 Center Speed Management Program.
Yes, good afternoon, everybody. I just wanted to highlight a program that the Connecticut Training and Technical Assistance Center is going to be spearheading. It's a speed management sign program where you're going to be able to get two speed signs with all of the training and assistance in mounting the signs. And this is going to be through a high-risk rural road safety program. The towns have been selected. It's in the posting that was issued to you. They're in the process now of getting the funding and procuring the signs. I think this is a great opportunity for towns, especially in areas where they feel that they have high-speed issues, to work with the T2 Center. When you're on the program, it's 2 years right now. Year one, there's a listing of the towns that are going to be there. We're all aware that speed is probably the highest issue when it comes to crash fatalities and serious injuries. So these speed signs, you can install them and you can collect the data on them and then maybe look at other countermeasures that maybe you'll be able to use to bring down your crash numbers. The Training and Technical Assistance Center does a tremendous amount of work with all of our local agencies. I encourage you, if you have not participated in their programs, to do so. And that's it for that. This is the first of one of many, I'm sure, programs that they're going to be hosting and helping us with.
Thank you, Terry. That's great. Any questions or comments from anybody? All right, is our fearless leader on board? Or any other comments?
My only comment is probably a little bit later, and that is that we have about 16 days left in the federal funding authorization. And my understanding is there's going to be a continuing resolution or something like it to make sure government doesn't shut down. So we're waiting for that as a major next step. So that's, I guess, basically what I had to report. The other thing is we are putting forward a shared federal lobbyist between Pioneer Valley and CROG, which would be focused on transportation and workforce funding. So it might, if in fact this passes and it works out as planned, we might have direct access to Washington, D.C., both of the executive branch and legislative branch for transportation issues. So that was just a second point.
Thank you, Lyle. Any other comments from anybody?
Yeah, John, I wanted to bring up some CONDOT related issues and some updates regarding CONDOT. First off, I wanted to mention that the department announced that there are two new bureau chiefs recently. Kim Lissay has been announced as the Bureau Chief of Policy and Planning, and Scott Hill as the Chief Engineer and Bureau Chief of Engineering and Construction. And so we're trying to get some meetings with them. Also, Garrett Ucolito was announced well earlier this year as the Deputy Commissioner. And he will be speaking to our policy board on Wednesday. So if anybody wants to tune into that, they can hear an update from DOT about him. So there's been some personnel changes over at DOT, and we're trying to get on everybody's radar over there so that we don't lose our influence over at DOT, and so we can improve our influence. But on that topic of DOT, we also did meet with Hugh Hayward regarding the LOTSIP program, and we plan to meet with him very shortly regarding STP Urban. But regarding LOTSIP, I wanted to give everybody an update, and we spoke a while ago mentioning that we were going to meet with him and had a few bullet items that the committee gave us. One was regarding their responsiveness in getting comments out and approvals for lots of projects, and we mentioned that to them. They did apologize for a couple projects being lagging with comments or approvals, and they took responsibility for that. But since they have added a third reviewer, and we have seen at CROG, according to Satoria, who's much more deeply involved in the weeds with this, an improvement in their response times. So that's hopeful going forward, and they did commit to improvement on that area. Another issue was the 15% cap on pavement rehab and standalone sidewalk. They did not provide much flexibility regarding that, but they did say that they want to limit the amount that goes towards maintenance type projects, and that's the main reason for the cap. And they have not been tracking that cap per se, but have been just informally monitoring it, and they don't see an issue. They don't see anybody abusing it, so they haven't tracked it, officially. They do plan on releasing a new guideline policy soon. And in it will be some more clarification on the 75-year bridge service life criteria that they've recently been pushing. They do realize that certain elements of bridges will not be able to meet that service life, so they'll They'll provide more detail in that, for example, decks and membranes and things of that nature. We do plan on providing some comments before that regarding issues that we've seen regarding how things work with the with getting the encroachment permits from the districts. And then also, again, regarding that 15% cap, although the 15% cap is kind of split between right now pavement rehab and standalone sidewalk, I do think that standalone sidewalks are not a maintenance issue. That's a new, deals with new sidewalks. So we don't think that that should be included in the cap. So that'll be a conversation with them, which would free up more room in the 15% for the pavement rehab. So that would be a comment that we'd give them regarding their update to the guidelines. There was one more thing, and that is the budget going forward. They have already submitted their budget to OPM, and this is in anticipation of the 2022-23 budget. Right now we're in fiscal year 2021 as far as the state's concerned, since July 1st. So right now they're already submitted to OPM, the CONDOT's budget. They anticipate a very difficult budget year. Of course, OPM and the governor will react to that budget and come out with some recommendations to the legislature, and I guess in late winter it usually is, and then the legislature looking at it through spring. So that just shows how far in advance things have to go. But they did submit for $67 million with a lots of funding in both 2022 and 2023, which matches what we have been getting. So they've submitted that to OPM. They anticipate a difficult budget year going forward. The STF has been in poor shape because of COVID and reduced revenues, but they are hopeful that we will support transportation and MPOs and municipalities will support the upcoming anticipated budget, especially for lots that they could use our support. So I got a little long-winded there, but if there's any questions, let me know, or let Satoria know. She was in on the meetings too.
Rob, I have one question on the budget, on the LOTSIP allocation. How does that match up against the allocations for SDP Urban for our area going forward? They're supposed to be equal.
They are about equal. They are going to start to lag a bit, though, which could be a comment going forward, because basically, and it depends on the next, you know, we're talking about continuing resolutions. It depends on the next federal funding bill. But in FAST Act, STP Urban went up the sub-allocated portion of it, which is what we used to get.
Yep.
And they call it sub-allocated because that goes to each metropolitan area. That was written into legislation to go up by 1% a year throughout the FAST Act. So that's increased by 5% over the course of FAST Act. And our equivalent LOTSIP has not increased by 5%. It stayed level. So it's small right now, but that could turn into a big number if the next federal bill comes out and says it's going to continue to increase or whatnot. So that could be a comment regarding guidelines also.
I think it'd be a comment now. If it's already starting to slip, we better try and nip it before it really slips.
Yes. Agreed. We'll get that comment over to them.
Thank you. Any other comments at this point? Any other items? It's my understanding we do not have any TIP amendments.
That's correct.
Okay, then we will skip 5 and move on to 6 with Sotoria and the LOTSIP awards.
Okay, thank you. So we're recognizing lots of projects. We've done this periodically. We did it a couple of years back. This is a period from July 1st, 2017 through June 30th, 2020. So we'd like to recognize some projects. Of course, it's always difficult and challenging to pick specific projects or municipalities to recognize, but we feel it's important to at least acknowledge those projects that are first and also that expedite the design and delivery process. So this morning we'd like to recognize 6 municipalities. One to start with is the quickest LOTSIP funded reconstruction project, which is Day Hill Road, reconstruction. You can see, thanks to Mike and Mike Cipriano and to Ryan, we are able to provide pictures of before and after pictures. So you can see the condition of Day Hill Road beforehand. You can see it after. This is 1,900 linear feet. It's a four-lane divided roadway, classified as a minor arterial, and it connects, as many of you know, I take it every day, it connects 91 and Route 75. So this took about 277 days in design. So congratulations to Windsor on this one, but I'd like to, there's two projects from Windsor, so if we could go to the pavement rehab. This is Kennedy Road, and this is a pavement rehab project. This is phase two. The original one, I think, was one of the first projects that went through lots of program. So you can see the before and after pictures, before on the left, after on the right. And there was substantial damage to the roadway. It's a substantial improvement on the right. This was 4,500 feet. A linear feet, and it's classified as a collector. This is a northbound roadway. The original project was done on the southbound, so this is the opposite side of the roadway. So congratulations to Windsor on those two projects, and this is the fastest one through design and into construction. So let's move on to the next one is Plainville. Congratulations also to Plainville on the Northwest Drive reconstruction. You can see the beforehand and the after on the reconstruction. This is 4,300 linear feet. It's an urban minor arterial. It connects Plainville with, as many of you know, 72, I-84, 177 Route 10 area, so it's definitely a regional significance for this roadway. So congratulations to Plainville on their reconstruction project. So the second quickest, lots of funded pavement rehabilitation project to be advanced is Rocky Hill, and this is Dividend Road. It's a pavement rehab. You can see the before and after. Substantial cracking, and after, of course, the restriping, the nice pavement on it. And this one is classified as an urban collector, 5,870 linear feet, access to I-91, Route 9, Route 99. It took, I think, 205 days through the design process. So congratulations to Rocky Hill for expediting their design and into construction. Coventry. Well, Coventry has the first bridge that went through the design process. It's currently in construction, so we couldn't give it quite because the construction, the authorization to award was actually awarded in July, not in June, and this is as of June. But congratulations to Coventry. You can see beforehand, it's a functionally obsolete bridge. It was a total bridge replacement, and they're currently in construction now on the right hand, and we look forward to seeing the finished project, finished product. So congratulations to Coventry for the first bridge in the LHTSA program to go through the design process. So Glastonbury, we recognize Glastonbury because they were awarded and went through the design process for the first off-road multi-use trail to be advanced through the design and into construction. You can see on the left-hand side, this trail is going to be a 10-foot trail going through the construction process. It's 2,800 feet. And on the right-hand side, that's not the completed project, but it's another trail in Glastonbury from 2012, and that's what it will look like when the trail is finished with its construction. So we look forward to that as well. So congratulations to Glastonbury. And then lastly, but not leastly, is Granby, Salmon Brook Route 10 and 202. This is a standalone sidewalk project that is the first to advance through design and into construction, although we've had multiple ones since then, but Granby was the first. It's a sidewalk right on Route 10, 202, and had the lighting along with it. So congratulations to Granby. I think it was 2,200 feet of sidewalk. So congratulations to Granby. So I want to just say congratulations to all the towns and municipalities. We've done a great job this year, and I'm happy to be able to recognize just a few of the ones that completed quickly or also were the first in the program. So congratulations, and thank you, Mike and Ryan, for helping me put the presentation together. It's nice to see it in pictures.
Thank you, Satoria. Congratulations to all the projects, and congratulations also to the CROG staff for obviously assisting those municipalities in moving these projects along as successfully and as quickly as they did. So congrats to everybody. Okay, we'll now move on to a presentation by Snow Peng from CONDOT regarding ADA planning initiatives. Snow, welcome.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for the introduction. Let me just pull up my presentation on my computer. And thank you for Capital Region for providing me with this opportunity. Everybody can hear me, right? Just confirming. Okay, good. And so on the side note, if you have any comments or questions, feel free to raise your hand and feel free to turn on your camera. I'm better with faces than, you know, just the sound and then the names. So so that will be great. And I'm looking to build a connection between the DOT and the towns on this ADA related issues. Next slide, please. Okay, so a little background of myself. You can call me Snow, and my real name is Xiao Xue Peng. It's in Chinese. That was the direct translation, actually. So I started my position as the ADA coordinating engineer last year, September. So just hit 1 year. Prior to that, I joined the DOT back in 2013. Major of the time I was in traffic project design department dealing with traffic projects. And then I did a brief 6 month in bridge before I got transferred to this new position. And I am a licensed PE. Next slide, please. Okay, so here I wanna to bring your attention on. So my title is the ADA coordinating engineer. Now, well, we also have an ADA coordinator for the department. His name is Eric Smith. He is the state's Equal Employee Opportunity Director. He deals with all titles under the ADA, including employment and public entity telecommunication. And people who have a complaint against the state will typically go through him first. And then if it's engineering related, he'll pass it to me because he's not an engineer. So a lot of construction related issue or design, he's not very familiar. So, which is why the state established this position. Next one, please. Next slide. Okay. So the purpose of my presentation is I want the state and the municipals to work together, right? Because I believe a better communication not just saves money, it's also to build a long-term relationship. It's good for everybody, both of the state and the town. And here I just wanna bring up about, so one of our goal, okay? So we are proposing to have all, we have an accessibility barrier removal goal in our federally approved ADA transition plan. Now, this goal is to have all curb ramp within state right away be compliant by 2035. That's 15 years from now. And the reason we came up with this number is mainly because the state is trying to dedicate there's a project called the VIP Vendor in Place Project. The state is trying to dedicate that as the major lead in bring up all curb ramp within state right away up to compliance. And then now for the state road, the VIP project we have, so it's an annual pavement resurfacing project. It paves the state road, and typically a state road will be repaved within 15 years or less. And then we all know the ADA regulation that, you know, pavement resurfacing is considered alteration. So all curb ramp that the pavement resurfacing touches has to bring up to compliance. Therefore, we're hoping, you know, in 15 years when we repave all the state road, all the curb ramp, it will bring up to compliance. Next slide, please. So however, you know, our VIP project do not address a lot of the situation. It's a can of worms. There's a lot of situation out there that it won't be addressed. And so I'm trying to work it out either with the state or the municipals to have all these area to be compliant based on our ADA transition plan. So our VIP project is established through Office of Highway Operation under maintenance department. Their maintainers and their contract is a DAS contract monitored by the Department of Administrative Service. So typically it doesn't go through the Office of Engineering and Construction. And then their budget is the low, it's not low, but it's very standard. The state writes the contract, give it to DAS, and DAS monitors the bid and, you know, select the vendor. So in the DAS contract, we don't have electrical works. If there's a large drainage issue, they don't address. If there's no existing curb ramp, they don't put in new ones just because it's not part of the project scope. Okay. And then there's also underlying terrain, right-of-way ability. They don't really work with the office right-of-way to do property acquisition. If they see problem, they just skip it as of right now. Next slide, please. And there's also areas like if our VIP, right, they touch from curb to curb, and there is, if you see in the diagram, there's crossing town roads, okay, at the town road approach. Even it's within the state right away, but our VIP didn't cover that area, they don't construct either because it's not required. Next slide. And then, so there's also other projects like the granite curbs and decorative sidewalk. Those are not part of the DAS contract either. So when the VIP comes to that, you know, our typical procedure we're planning to do is to replace with concrete and then to bring it up to compliance. But in some location, you know, maybe the town do have plan to reconstruct those. So you might likely to want us to place a hold on those areas and you're gonna come back in to fix it yourself. So in those areas, we gotta coordinate a lot. But right now it's a very difficult way of coordinating because we don't have a live tracking of the VIP project. Like I worked with this issue with the town of East Hartford, Manchester, I forgot. So what happens, they wanna know exactly where, when, which exact curb ramp in that location. Now, I can give you the location of right now, but the state, we changes the VIP, the maintenance office, it's not under me. So I don't know when they change something, they decide to stop early for the paving, or they just all of a sudden took out this area. So I can't, it's a lot of middle ground. And then by the time it reached to you, changes happens and it become a whole mess. So that's another problem that we have, we're going to work on. And I wanted the town to know that. So sidewalk, through case law, I had our legal department to look it up. Sidewalk considered a local function or service and therefore should be maintained by local communities. So these are through case law that usually lawsuit related cases are usually the settlement is filed against the town or the municipal or the local property owner, the state haven't been sued for a sidewalk, unless it's a state property, like a state facility or state parking lot, stuff like that. Even if it's within state right away. So, and I know a lot of municipal, that you guys assign the place to the local property owner, like the sidewalk in front of your house, even if it's in within the towns right away, you know, it's the local property owner, the responsibility to clear out the snow and stuff like that. Next slide, please. So that's just some step that some, you know, obstruction for just the curb ramp issues. Back to the ADA topic, I want to talk about the ADA. So ADA is a federal civil rights law signed by George Bush in 1990. It's the 30-year anniversary, actually. They just celebrated in July. So under this law, people with disabilities are entitled to all the rights, privileges, advantage, and opportunities that others have in participating in civil activities. 1990 YADA regulations, they added that public entities with 50 or more employees are required to develop an ADA transition plan. This 50 people includes part-time and seasonal employees. And so the ADA transition plan, it's to detail any structural changes that were undertaken to achieve program access and specifying a time frame for their completion. So what this means is that you have to identify the place that are not ADA accessible, you know, that are discriminating against the people with disabilities, and you have to provide a time frame that when you plan on work on it. So the reason with that is, for example, you have a curb ramp. Someone's slipped on it and then sued for $300,000. If your town got this lawsuit claim, and DOJ will come down, says, okay, what do you have? Do you have an ADA transition plan? No, we don't. Then they said, okay, then here's $300,000 settlement. There you go. If you have an ADA transition plan saying, okay, this is part of our 5-year improvement project, and then this will, it is actually covered and will be reconstructed within 3 years or within 10 years or 15 years, then they were like, the town are making an effort, so they reduce the settlement. Next slide, please. So the state, we have an ADA transition plan. It was developed since 2007. It was just approved last year by the Federal Highway. It can be accessed by going to the DOT's website. On the main page, there's a line says the American with Disability Act. You click on that. In that page, you have access to the state's ADA transition plan. That's federally approved. We also established an ADA inbox to accept complaints, and we have a form and a procedure listed up there for any public who have any ADA complaint that they can fill it out. So the town, if anything's ADA, if it's state-related issue, you can also direct people to that page. Next page, please. Next slide. Okay, so this is, I want to also mention is the state we, last year, May, we issued an engineering directive. It's basically adopt PROAG as our design standard. PROAG stands for Public Right-of-Way Accessibility Guideline. So what this is prior to that, it's ADAG, which is American with Disability Act Accessibility Guideline. So when that ADAG was developed, it was mainly for buildings and on-site facilities. So hallways, bathroom doors, and parking lot, how you go from the parking lot to the buildings. So there's a lot of unique, unique situation between those and the public right away. So as the picture you see down below on the left side, ADAG, they capped on the slope requirement and the distance of a ramp. Where PROAC, they allowed you to match the road grade to the sidewalk. So it's much more reasonable. But PROAC, they asked for 4 or 5 feet wide sidewalk, where ADAC only required a 3 feet for the wheelchair to fit through. But for public right away, the DOT have chosen the PROAC, and we're going with the PROAC as with the best of the build, the design capabilities. And that was also a direction from the Federal Highway. They wanted all DOT to use PROAC, even though it haven't been officially adopted by DOJ yet. So basically ADAG is the law, but PROAC is the design standard for now. Next slide, please. So this is the ADA technical and feasibility form. So if you go into the engineering directive, now all these documents later I will send out or have Kara send out a handout with all this link and information in there. So in the engineering directive, there's also a link to an ADA technical and feasibility form. So what this form is, it's a document where you can document the location and then putting a justification to say this corner cannot be covered under your scope of work, or you can't improve to make it better, or you can only do so much to make it as best as you can. So after that, it doesn't have to meet the PROAC requirement. So, and then once you fill this form, they have a instruction on who will approve these. And then you follow those procedures. So this is not just for a review process, it's also a documentation process. Like the example I had before, someone slipped on this curb ramp, asked for a $300,000 claim. If you don't have anything, you get the maximum settlement that's reasonable based on the claim. But if you have a technical and feasibility, oh, back then we look at this area, okay, to make this compliant, we have to spend $300,000 to move the utility pole, and the project is only $20,000. So if you have something like that, then as a support, then the DOJ's penalty will very much be reduced. So this is something, you know, back then I know towns that, you know, they have a problem area and they know they can't fix it. It's a can of worms. So they just skip this whole area and then move on. This is a way for maybe let you just to improve it halfway through, like by half, or possibly skip this location and still be able to complete the project within the federal requirement. Next slide, please. So this is something I want to show you that what I do. So the picture on the left is, it was a trail project that are federally funded, take parts. And they have a place, you know, it's a 15% hill. Now 15%, like I can just imagine if I was there on a wheelchair, the first thing I look at is where am I gonna crash into, okay? Even though PROAC do allow your sidewalk to match your road grade, but this is dangerous, this is something else. So sometimes if you ask me for some recommendation, I would come back at you, maybe provide a landing area, some rail, or even plant some vegetation that you won't just crash right into the water. On the right behind, it was a different project. They had some location where it has a different geometry location. The slope really can't be fixed correctly. So I will provide some guidance on, you know, which one can be designed with its best abilities for the American with this, for the disabled person. Next slide, please. This is another example where this is Route 1 in a town. And then they came to me because they said they have a utility pole for their sidewalk project. This is municipal sidewalk project. And it's within state right away. And they're applying for encroachment permit. They said we only have 25 inches clearance and the property owner wouldn't grant easement or rights away or anything. So what happened is, I told them, I look at the area, you know, this is Route 1, and if 25 inches clearance is not enough for even a standard wheelchair. So to those people, it's like a walk, even for people with strollers. So in that situation, you have to back all the way to the nearest ramp, come down to the main road with that road is probably less than 2 foot shoulder, travel on shoulder on Route 1 until you pass that utility pole and get back on. And then it's very dangerous. That's why I gave them the suggestion and the goal, say, okay, do a curb ramp, at least people can get off the curb to get around the pole. So that's some recommendation that I provide, and you know, and also approve their technical and feasibility form. Next slide, please. So this is another thing I want to bring up, that the DOT is developing a GIS-based inventory, okay? And it's to collect all the curb ramp information within the state. We have, within state right away, we have over 20,000 curb ramps. Now this app haven't been released to us yet. I'm working with the developer to develop this, but I throw it out there because I want the town, the municipal to know, in case you guys are developing something like this and you want some guidance or recommendation on your attribute table or how you score them to determine which one to reconstruct, let me know. We can, you know, certainly provide some insight. Next page, next slide. And this one is for even future out, you know, if we have a database like that, we want to potentially work it out to have it benefit with the public also, maybe help them to decide which road to choose to travel. And also we want to maybe have connection with the municipals, possible to import and export data, so we can talk to each other more in a better platform. Next slide. So that's all for my presentation. I do have a survey. I want to see if I can. I'm gonna send the link through chat. If the municipal can fill that out, that would be great. It only takes you about 3 minutes. And the reason I want to do that is I want to keep a log on the people that reach out to me or I reach out to you in the future, so we know we can communicate better. Any questions?
Anybody have any questions of Snow?
Hi, this is Doug Wilson. Just a generic comment. I think that internally you need to work on the communication between the different areas. I know we had the multiple traffic signals up and down Route 5 on Main Street. And as you extensively mentioned, the sidewalks are our responsibility and we're liable for lawsuits. But if you're redoing work, then you're going to do the ramps. So the people who are designing those improvements should actually go to the field, because exactly the condition that you had with the slide with the telephone pole and you name it, all kinds of things are in the way. None of these standard numbered ramps can just be installed as if blindly from a desk at DOT. It doesn't work. They have to be custom done in the field to make things work. Or as in the case you had, you know, you're making a lot of compromises. So I just wanted to say, this is not a cut and dried thing, but I don't think that designers at DOT are taking this as seriously as you want us to.
I understand. Actually, I'm sorry, which town are you from, Doug?
East Hartford.
East Hartford, okay. So there's a couple approach that the DOT is working on. For example, the app. In the app, we actually collect the slope and the width and then take pictures. So it does record a good amount of items. And as of right now, it's the Department of Maintenance that are doing the curb ramp under their VIP project. So they don't design. They get the location. They do go out there and look at the location, says which one were covered by the VIP. And then they give the location to the contractor and the contractor design. So that's for right now. But potentially, you know, our engineering construction can also issue our own sidewalk project to address difficult areas and stuff like that. So.
I understand that, but it is traffic signals, and those traffic signal plans, people who are designing those love to just point to a spot and say, that's a 3A, that's a 4B, never works. The contractor went out there, painted that all on the ground, we walked them all, and they were all wrong. They all had to be changed.
Okay.
Just saying, it's not us.
Yeah. Yeah, when I was in traffic, I had the same problem. The contractor had me go out there to make sure. It depends on the designers, especially for traffic project. Like for mine project, signal replacement in Bridgeport, I went out there, I looked at each curb ramp, and I designed the type that will fit there. And then the contractor didn't trust me. So for the inspection, for the pre-construction meeting, I met him. He asked me to go out there to check on curb ramp for one whole day. I went there and we checked, it works. So it depends on the designer, but certainly on my side, I can push the traffic designers to pay much more attention on those curb ramp area.
I think that'd be a great idea. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions or comments?
Sure, so this is Tom Roy with the town of Simsbury, and I think maybe it kind of follows along on Doug's conversation, but if the municipalities are going to be responsible for the sidewalk and we're going to be responsible for the curb ramps, I think there should be some level of involvement in the municipalities when the DOT is designing the curb ramps. We've even had challenges with whether or not the tactile warning strips, whether they're replaceable or not replaceable, what color they are. And we've actually, on some of our sections, have been doing it with the cast iron because it holds up to snow removal a lot better. And it's small details, but again, if the DOT wants to help facilitate this relationship, it's making sure that the towns, if we're going to be held responsible for the maintenance, we need to be having some seat at the table during the design.
Okay, I'll definitely take note. As for right now, the VIP contract, so I think I'm not too involved because maintenance is the one did the contract. So they write the contract out to DAS and DAS monitors it and then runs it for 3 years and we revise it after 3 years. So it's like that. And then when there's item that's not included, okay, we have to wait to the next set of the contract cycle to fix stuff. And another thing is I try, so for example, granite curb, a lot of you guys might have reached out to you for the granite curb issue. So when I only did that for District 1. I didn't even do it for District 3, you know, like the whole along the coast. It's a can of worm because each town, they come back, they want to know exactly when, where. And it's really hard to coordinate, which is why I'm waiting for the app to be passed down to us, and then we can start getting data and more live data before I can start really coordinate. But if there's specific location, you know, you see the state are doing something you wasn't aware, feel free to reach out to me and I can do whatever I can to help coordinate as of right now. But when it progress down the road, I would definitely, you know, keep all the municipal in the loop.
Any other questions for comments for Snow?
Hey, John, Kara, I just wanted to note that the handout that Snow was mentioning is posted alongside her presentation on the meeting event page on the CROG website.
Thanks, Kara.
Hey, all right.
Thank you, Snow, very much.
I have a question real quick. Regarding, you mentioned it's really the Department of Justice and USDOT is involved also, and especially for you guys got approval from FHWA, but from a town level, when they have a transition plan, is there any required approval or is that just something for the files that that they have to fall back on in case there's an issue?
Good question. I know a lot of towns are developing those, are taking it seriously. One of the town that I know the engineer, he's even get consultant to do it for them. So it's a ADA Act regulation. So I think it's required as part of the Department of Justice.
Mm-hmm. And then you mentioned, I don't know if you have an answer for this, but you mentioned the Department of Justice, if you have an ADA plan, your penalty is potentially reduced. Is that a general penalty that they review the plans just, you know, at random, or is that only if there's a lawsuit that lawsuit, you know, finding the penalty would be reduced?
So right now there's not really a clear law for the penalty. That's why all the settlement, you see it through case law. And I don't have a clear direction, but I've been following through a lot of lawsuits, like the city of Seattle got sued. Los Angeles, that used to be the biggest settlement. Now it's New York City, they got sued. Colorado Springs, New Jersey. I think Philadelphia is under a lawsuit review right now. So what happened is this group of lawyers, they sue because the town or the city wasn't making an effort into making stuff accessible. So it's not just random locations.
So okay? it's not someone gets hurt and sues. It's just a group of
people. Well, if that group of lawyers found you somehow.
Right.
So right now it's all the big city, like Los Angeles, New York City, Philadelphia, Chicago, Colorado Springs, places like that. If you look at a little town like Summers, probably not. But know that all these little towns, they do get claims. Someone slip on the sidewalk on Main Street, they sue. So when I think Los Angeles, when they got the settlement of I think 1.2 billion, it was a B. It began with a B. I'm not billion amount, and then it's two. You have to fix your curb ramp within this much years. I think they have a 15-year span or 10. I'm not sure. So, but then on top of that, they still get little claims under who slipped under what curb ramp. You have to pay for the medical cost, stuff like that. So that settlement's for the city to fix. You have a 15-year plan to fix all sidewalks. But then on top of that, there's still little ones when people slip and they sue and then, you know.
Did they not have a transition plan and that's why they got such a high?
If they do, maybe the settlement will be less. That's what I will say. I don't know the exact details. If you Google, you know, like the ADA lawsuits, all stuff start coming out and then you can see all those big ones, what happens.
Thanks a lot for the presentation.
You're really welcome.
Informative. Thank you.
And that group of lawyers is started in the West Coast. That's why, you know, Los Angeles, Las Vegas, Colorado Springs, and now it merged to the East Coast. So that's why that was their direction. That's why New York got sued much later than Los Angeles. But then, you know, it's only gonna, as more and more lawyer knows this, you know, they start going at it and then you're gonna get hammered sometime or in the future, so.
All right, thank you again, Snow.
All right, thank you.
Hey, John.
Yes.
Could you ask if anyone came in late after the meeting started, please?
Per Karen's request, is there anyone on board who came in after we did the roll call?
Patrice Carson from Bolton did.
Thank you.
Thanks, Patrice.
Yep. Mike Fisher from BL Companies.
Say again.
Mike Fisher from BL Companies.
Thank you, Mike. Did you get that, Karen?
Mike Fisher from DL Companies.
Yes.
And Jennifer Carrier. Hi, everyone, from Federal Highway.
Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, John.
Kirk Severance.
Hi, Kirk. Any others? Okay, any other business to come before the committee today? Hearing none, thank you all. And we'll see you again in October, and I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved, Patrice Carson.
Thank you, Patrice. Is there a second?
And Rob Trottier.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
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 All right. Be well, be safe, everybody.
You guys too.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Bye, guys. Thanks.
Thank you.